You're listening to The Point. Earlier in the hour, we heard Crocker Snow Jr. mention his concern about the growing seal population on Muskeget Island. Over the course of 7 decades, he estimates he saw the numbers of gray seals increase from a few dozen to over 10,000. Muskeget is one small island within the larger Northwest Atlantic ecosystem. To get a better sense of the gray seal population and their role in the ecosystem, we invited Stephanie Wood to join us. She's a research professor of seal biology at UMass Boston School for the Environment. Stephanie, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us.
Of course. Thanks for inviting me.
You've been to Muskeget. In fact, you did seal survey work there. Why is Muskeget a good spot to collect seal survey data?
I did. So, yes, Muskeget is a really important, one of the most important pupping sites in the U.S. for gray seals. And so we do both aerial surveys over Muskeget, and over various projects, we've also captured and tagged pups and collected various samples and things at that site. We know historically that Nantucket Sound was an important place for breeding gray seals. I mean, we know that in recent times, Muskeget and Monomoy Islands, which are both down around the Cape and Islands, were the first places where we saw gray seals recolonize and start having their pups again in the late 1980s. That was documented by a woman named Valerie Rowe. But prior to that time, we know from archaeological records that both gray and harbor seals were found to be widespread along the northeast U.S. coast. We know that from Native American shell middens, where the remains of both species are found from Eastport, Maine, all the way down into Long Island Sound to sites near New Haven, Connecticut.
So we know historically that gray seals did breed in our region. Do we know if they did to the extent they are now?
So that's a great question that many people ask. So we know certainly their distribution and presence from the archaeological evidence. It's a little trickier to actually sort of backcast and figure out, well, how many seals were here? We know that from work done by Lely et al., they looked at actually bounty records. So there were seal bounties in both Maine and Massachusetts throughout the 1800s and even into the mid-1900s, where an individual would kill a seal and they'd turn in either a nose or a tail, and they'd be paid anywhere between $1 and $5 for that bounty kill. The bounty was in place to decrease perceived competition for fish resources. And so in Lely et al.'s study, what they found was over 40,000 bounties were paid, and they estimated that to be between 70 and 100,000. 135,000 seals that were killed. So it's a little tricky to backcast that. We know from some genetic analyses that looked at the genetic diversity of seals in the Native American shell middens that there was a higher level of genetic diversity in that sort of pre-exploitation population, which would be indicative of a large population.
So give us a sense of how the seal population has changed since the 1970s. What was the population like, once we had the protection go into effect?
Sure. So really for gray seals, which is what I have spent most of my time studying and is the species found on Muskeget Island, they were locally extinct or extirpated. They were very rarely seen in the mid-1900s to the point where the state of Massachusetts actually passed a law protecting gray seals in 1965. And then you may have heard of the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is a federal law that protected them in 1972. And so really for a lot of those decades, those 1970s and 80s, gray seals were extremely rare to be seen in northeast U.S. waters. Again, I mentioned Valerie Rowe. She documented the first pups being born on Muskeget and Monomoy in the late 1980s. And then sort of the population grew from there. And I think a couple of things I like to mention when we think about the gray seal recovery and return to U.S. waters is, you know, there were several different factors that in combination allowed for this recovery to occur. So certainly those laws that I just mentioned were really important in protecting them. But the other important piece is that there is a healthy source population on Sable Island, which is off the coast of Nova Scotia. Sable Island is really the epicenter of the Northwest Atlantic gray seal population. And we know from genetic studies and from tags and from observations of branded animals that Sable Island was really the source for a lot of the animals that dispersed to U.S. sites. And so that source population has been really important. So Valerie, when she was documenting early pupping in the late 80s and early 90s, she saw a lot of animals that had brands, and she could actually trace their history back to being born on Sable Island. Another key piece of, which is really, really interesting.
That's very cool,
We still see periodically branded animals, you know, even today when we're out on the sites. The other important piece is actually, so the protection was great, the source population is great, but of course the animals needed places to go when they returned to the Northeast U.S. And so the other important piece of the story for gray seals is that actually humans have changed how we use islands as well over that, you know, sort of throughout the 20th century. So if we look in Maine, the largest pupping site in Maine is called Seal Island. And that was historically a fish camp where people would stop off and dry fish before bringing them back, before we had large motorboats that had, you know, refrigeration and things like that. Muskeget, Crocker may have mentioned that Muskeget was a really important island where there was fishing and bird hunting and activities that were taking place year-round. I believe there were somewhere between 25 and 30 hunting cabins on Muskeget in 1900. And as Crocker probably described, you know, there's really two structures left out there, and there's a lot less human activity. Five of the nine pupping sites in the U.S. are actually part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Refuge System. And so in some ways, you know, when we think about recovering populations, we often hear a lot about habitat and habitat loss. But for gray seals, at least in terms of pupping sites, habitat has opened up throughout the Northeast U.S. So sort of all of those factors together played a role in their recovery and recolonization.
So we've seen the gray seal population increase over the last 20 or so years. What are we seeing now? Are the numbers stabilizing, growing, declining? What's happening now?
So that's a great question. And so I did a recent study with some colleagues where we looked at trends in the number of pups born at various sites. And so what we found was some of the sites are still increasing in terms of the numbers of pups being born, and then some of them are somewhat stable. Again, we really should think about the gray seals as a Northwest Atlantic population. Most of the majority of the gray seals are actually found on Sable Island. So just to give some perspective, you know, a high single day count of pups on Muskeget is maybe somewhere around 4,000 pups. Sable Island, there's somewhere near 70,000 pups born annually. So we're sort of a small part of this really large population. But what's interesting is on Sable Island, where they've really been monitoring that population since the early 1970s, they saw almost 30 years of exponential growth. But they're seeing that population slow down, and they're seeing changes in what we call vital rates. So when we think about what a population is doing, we think about, you know, what is the carrying capacity? And carrying capacity is just a term for how many individuals in a population can exist in a given habitat. And it's influenced by all sorts of things. It's influenced by space, you know, resources, food, finding mates, all those various things. And so what the researchers on Sable Island are seeing is changes in things like how old a female is when she has her first pup. So when that population was growing rapidly, it was maybe age 3 or 4. Now they're seeing females that are more like 5 or 6. So that's indicative of a slowing in the rate of increase. They're seeing things like juvenile survival decrease over time. And so these are shifts that are naturally occurring that are related to a population probably nearing carrying capacity. And I think the important thing to remember is, again, what's happening on Sable Island is also important for what's happening at U.S. sites, because we know the individuals are still dispersing to U.S. waters from Canada. There's a lot of movement.
So when one sees aerial photographs of thousands of seals on beaches, it's pretty amazing. But it also makes you wonder, are seals in those numbers and density good for the ecosystem? We hear people express concerns about water quality, beach erosion, and the impact of seals on fisheries. What do we know about the place of seals within the larger ecosystem?
So a couple of thoughts about that. You know, we do know that these species, you know, they evolved here. They're part of the natural ecosystem, and lots of species evolved, you know, in harmony with each other, interacting with each other. And so I would say, one, that, you know, seals are supposed to be here. They're part of that historic ecology that we can find in things like the archaeological records. I think, to your point, you know, for most people, our living memory, if we go back to the 70s and 80s, and it was so rare to see a seal and then to see these pictures, of thousands of animals, it is a stark contrast. It's really occurred in our lifetimes, and I think that takes a bit of adjusting. But, you know, several studies have shown things like water quality. Folks on the Cape looked at the closure of Cape Cod beaches, and what they found was that water quality closures of beaches near seals haven't increased over time, so they don't appear to be impacting water quality. You know, studies in other areas have shown seals to play important roles in the ecosystem in terms of their trophic levels and where they're foraging, that they sometimes may remove fish that are competitors with species like cod. You know, they eat abundant forage fish, which might be predators or competitors of target commercial species. So they play an important role. And there's also some recent studies that are showing that they may play an important role in shifting nutrients from the marine to terrestrial environments. So really, I think we're still just beginning to understand all the ways seals sort of, all the roles they play in the ecology. And so I don't think we can assume that it's all negative, especially since we know they evolved in these systems, right, with these other species. So, and I know people, you know, it's not a simple A to B to C, right? You know, there's a lot of complex interactions that are occurring.
Now, we know that great white sharks and seals in the Gulf of Maine and in the Northwest Atlantic are linked. Can you explain this relationship and what more do we need to know?
Sure. So, yes, obviously that's something that people are concerned about as well. And, you know, we do know, of course, that sharks eat seals, right? We see that. But I think it's important to remember that sharks eat a lot of other things too, right? Great white sharks eat a variety of prey, seals, yes, but also fish. And, you know, recently we've seen in the news pictures of white sharks scavenging on large whale carcasses, right? So there's multiple interactions happening there. And I think it's important to remember that there's a lot of the great white shark range where seals aren't found, right? So they're really only here for part of the year, and then they head back south where we don't find seals. And so there's certainly a link there. I think we need to better understand, you know, what their interaction is, how important of a prey item seals are to sharks, I think would be an important question to answer as well. And then the other piece to remember is that sharks, like seals, have been protected for decades now. So part of this, too, is that shark populations are recovering as well. And I totally understand everyone's concerns, but I think from a conservation perspective, a lot of this is really positive because it's showing us, you know, these are large predators that historically were part of this system, and now they're able to recover, which I think is great news from a conservation standpoint.
Periodically, we hear calls to amend the Marine Mammal Protection Act to limit or modify protections for seals. First, how likely is this to happen? And second, are there better options for addressing potential conflicts between seals and humans?
Right. So I am not an MMPA expert, so I'm not, I don't know how likely it is for that to happen. I will leave that to other people who are much more knowledgeable about the legalities of things. You know, certainly I think, you know, the Marine Mammal Protection Act was passed in a time where a lot of marine mammal populations really had been quite decimated. And so it wasn't envisioned, you know, things like the recovery that we've seen in the gray seal. So certainly I think it's reasonable to think about, you know, management, what should management look like in the future? You know, but I think seals play an important ecological role, and I think we need to understand that before we sort of intervene in any given way.
I'm certainly no seal expert, but to me, it seems they are very curious animals. And, you know, they look at you with those, you know, big brown eyes. And I wonder about their intelligence. Do you think we underestimate their intelligence?
I don't know. I'm always a little careful not to anthropomorphize them. But right. Certainly, you know, they definitely seem to, I know exactly what you're saying. You know, they sort of look at you and they seem to sort of follow along and watch what's happening. Certainly, you know, they're capable of learning things, figuring out, you know, how to interact with, you know, humans in various ways. I don't know if we underestimate their intelligence. That's a great question.
I kind of think we underestimate all animals' intelligence myself. I think there's a lot going on there that we don't quite understand.
That may be true.
Sure. You know, we hear a lot about the conflicts that seals have with humans, but I want to kind of just flip that for a second and talk about maybe a positive here, and that is tourism, right? That people come to see seals, right?
They do, yes. Yes, there are, seal watching operations on the Cape and down even into Long Island. People, there are groups that do seal walks. Obviously right now with COVID-19, a lot of that is not happening in the same way. But it is. I think as much as people maybe have sort of concerns or negative feelings about seals, I do think there's sort of a whole other side to that with a lot of people who really find them intriguing and positive and fun to see and all that. And I think that's great. They are sort of this they're very curious and they're fun to watch and I think that's great as well.
We'll post a link with more information about seal research and the Northwest Atlantic Seal Research Consortium at our website, capeandislands.org. Stephanie Wood is research professor of seal biology at UMass Boston School for the Environment. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Coming up after break, we talk with fisheries biologist Greg Scommel about his ongoing tagging of white sharks in the waters off the Cape and what he's learning about their behavior.